You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practice Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're growing a restorative practice, you're looking for one of the turning points in which things get better. And I've got an amazing, unbelievable restorative dentist on today, and she's going to share her story for the turning point when treatment acceptance went up with Amanda C. Do not miss this. Do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a few seconds.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you are looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practice Show. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for giving us your feedback and thanks for all the shares. We really appreciate it. We are up over to 32,000 followers and just having fun every day. And I told Amanda, we're just kind of making this up as we go. And I know some of you guys are listening on iTunes. Just so grateful for that. And today is a fantastic show and you do not want to miss this. And so a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you have questions, if you have questions, please add them to the feed and we'll get the answer straight from her as we're learning about her journey in dentistry. Also, continue to add questions to the feed later on, and we'll do our best to see if we can't give you a good answer because we want you to get the most out of these when you're spending time on your education or anything that it might be. So now, Amanda, I am so grateful that you're on. This is your first time on. We've been trying to get you for a long time. We finally got you on. I know who you are. You're an amazing restorative dentist. But tell us a little bit about your journey. We have a lot of listeners now, young dental students, people all over the world listening. They may not know who you are. Tell us a little bit about your journey, where you practice, and who you are.
Yeah. Well, I'm Charleston, South Carolina. I went to dental school at NYU in New York City. And let's see, graduated in 2002. And went straight into an associateship from there for about a year. And I started my practice from scratch. And that was pretty daunting, to say the least. So zero patients, started from scratch. And, you know, I started early on my CE journey. So I really invested into high quality CE right out of the gates. And I really continued that path. And I do believe that learning never ends. It's something you have to do all the time and grow yourself. And doing that, you know, you start to meet other people, you network with other colleagues, and, you know, I've kind of molded and shaped my practice in a different direction over the years, and I'm strictly a restorative practice. So I don't do root canals, I don't place implants, I don't do extractions. So just really a focus on aesthetics. And you know, I do lecture some and I do some publishing. I'm involved out at the COIS Center in Seattle. And, you know, it's important to me to be involved with other dental organizations. For me, it fulfills me. Again, it helps me learn. So, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of where I've started and where I am now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I were talking before we went live. you know, sometimes people may look at you and go, gosh, it's so great. She's got, but this has not been an easy journey for you. There's a very real component of putting a life together with a practice. Can you share some insight? Because you've had to figure this journey out sometimes the hard way and with the help of others, right?
Yes. You know, I think in the beginning, starting, especially when you start your practice right out of dental school, you know, you're so eager to work and you're so eager to do the dentistry that you don't really have this balance of life and work balance. And so it, for me, putting my family and putting myself on the back burner was kind of the way I operated. You know, I did everything dentistry, but did little for myself. And I think it's important for every young dentist coming out that your personal coaching is just as important as your dental coaching. And you really need to invest in that, whether you need to hire somebody or you need to carve out that time for yourself. But I didn't really recognize that until much later. And it wasn't until that I really invested in myself that time, getting some personal coaching, some business coaching as well, that I started to see a change in my practice. And also in the person that I am as a mother, as a wife, as a lot of different things. So I just think that's something that we overlook sometimes, and we're just so focused on the dental side of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now we're going to talk about, you said there was one turning point in your career where treatment acceptance went up. We're going to talk about that. But, and then I want you to share with, you know, this is a very cool journey once you realize that, because it wasn't about hard selling. Like, what was the turning point in which your treatment acceptance went up? Let's talk about that first.
The turning point was when it was a while ago when a dental consultant said to me, don't talk dentistry. Right. And I'm like, what do you mean don't talk dentistry? I mean, that's what I do. You know, I can tell that I can do complex cases and I'm going to tell them how I'm different than this dentist or whatever it may be. And it was a real challenge for me to really slow down and think about that. And how am I going to get this person to trust me for their care without talking about dentistry? And I think it, when you break it all down, it comes back to what makes you want to have a relationship with any person you do business with, you know, and I bring it back to dentistry is a lot like building a house in the way we plan it, the way we execute it, but in the way we do business. So if you're building a house, you need to select a builder, right? Mm-hmm. And how do you select your builder? I mean, you might ask friends and family who they recommend. You go on reputation sometimes, but then you actually meet the builder. And when you meet the builder, do you go right into, tell me how you build this house? Do you think the builder really goes into, they don't, you know, you're getting to know this person, the actual person, to know, you know, do I like them? Do we fit? Do we mesh? Are we on the same page? Does he get me? And also it's not just that, it's not just the person, right? It's the facility that you walk into, fit the image and everything else, because you might have a stellar builder with a great reputation, but you walk in and his office is disheveled, or, you know, his front receptionist is rude. You know, I think it's all those elements that build up to that. And so the treatment acceptance, when they're finally there with you, I think to realize that patients just want to know, do I trust her and do I want to do business with her? Because if they do, we can figure the details out later. I can tell them how to build that house. Yeah. I can, you know, bore them to death, exhaust them with all the details and spend 2 hours talking about it if they want me to, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it is true. Don't talk about the dentistry. And when I started doing that, it's amazing the difference of treatment acceptance, you know, and ironically, it takes a whole lot less time too.
Yeah.
So I used to spend a crazy amount of time, you know, talk about the radiograph, the models, put it on our articulator and this and that. And now, you know, I bring none of those things in. I don't talk about any of that. And we just get to know each other. And we talk about all kinds of things. You know, they ask me about how many kids I have. And I ask them about how they ended up moving to Charleston or, you know, and we leave on a handshake and they either schedule or they don't.
You know, you were very aggressive on the learning side. You went to the Koi Center, which is an amazing opportunity to learn more. And the reality of it was when you started talking to people, that wasn't easy. You just didn't flip the switch and go, you know, this is totally easy, because yes. You have your program to learn so much. You become very, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can help these people so yes. much. So talk about the rewiring of that. Did it take you like a couple days, couple weeks to get comfortable with this? Well,
definitely not days, long time. Yeah. Because it is, I think, you know, we're dentists for a reason. I mean, there's that science part of our brain, and to tune that out and not talk about teeth is so hard. And you just, you kind of learn. And if you've never just taken the time to study people, I think, and study yourself, if you take that time and you're not talking about teeth and you're just looking at their face and listening and just be quiet, don't say a word, you know, just listen, you can kind of read what they're thinking and how they're feeling, you know. And you will have those real analytical people sometimes that will kind of pull you into that path and say, well, how does this process work? And they do want to know a little bit about teeth. But Kirk, it's not like, I don't know, it's not, there's some, not a magic solution to how you just flip the switch. I think it's practice, and role playing is huge. It sounds ridiculous, but role playing with your team members. So, you know, when we try to get better and we're doing all these things, you know, we would role play and say, pretend you're a patient, you know, mm-hmm. and don't be like a total pain in the butt patient, and, you know, make it real, like real questions that patients have. And you realize how you stumble and fall across certain topics and what you need to practice on, or what you are having a hard time articulating. And role playing really helps. I mean, it's like exercise, right? You got to do it over and over. And when you get it, you start to get comfortable and you say, oh, okay, you know, what if I do have a patient that comes up and says to me, well, how's that going to be done? And you know, if you're role playing, that's, you know how to handle the situation.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you mentioned one of my favorite words, which is a change in perspective in time. So you used to spend a lot of time probably on the clinical, gathering information. Give us some perspective. What did it used to be? And what is it now, when you say the time went way down when you're just connecting with people?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the amount of time, I used to think that if I had a cosmetic consult come in, that in order to sell these big aesthetic cases or rehabilitations, I needed to be so prepared for them. You know, I needed to have a certain amount of radiographs, mount their case, study it, have treatment plan options written out, give them the fees, give them the cost, so that I could just show them how organized everything was, that it was well thought out. And I mean, I would spend a lot of time preparing for these consults. And I don't know that any of that did anything to change their decision-making process. I mean, I think they realized I took a lot of time, but whether or not that really influenced them saying, ah, now she's going to make me really want to say yes to this treatment. It's when I put all that stuff away, and I do no planning at all going into these consults, to be honest with you. I do zero, and because I'm going in to just get to know the patient, to hear, what is your goal? You know, I mean, I think realistically, number one, do you have a budget? Because why am I going to waste my time coming up with 10 different options if I don't even know what your budget is? I mean, if a patient tells me I can only do $5,000 worth of dentistry, well, look, Mrs. Jones, let me figure out how we can make this work for you if that's your budget. And for some people, it's not the amount of money. It's how are they going to fit it in to their finances? So they might not mind spending $50,000 on a case, but they need to do it over 5 years. Right. Well, then that's going to give me a totally different treatment option. But before I spend that time to come up with all these scenarios for this patient, I just need to have a really real, candid, raw conversation with them and just get to know them, ask them what they're looking for, ask them what their budget is. It seemed really uncomfortable to ask people that in the beginning. You know, I used to kind of dodge the whole money question altogether, like what things cost and what everything is. But, you know, it's like building a house. You know, if you come up with the builder's going to ask you, you know, what's your budget?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned
that.
Absolutely. Now, I would imagine you just have less not anxiety, but it's just more relaxed. And you probably go in, you know, I've heard this from so many dentists. They go, like, I used to have all these forms. Now I just go in with a piece of paper sometimes.
Yes.
And I'm just listening. And yes. you go back to the trust thing. I do want to ask you a couple of questions. Like, you love getting to know people's stories. And then you also want to know if they have a budget. Now, do often people go, yes, I have a very specific budget? Or do they say, you know, I don't know, let me think about that. Like, how often do you get a very specific number when you ask that question? I'm just curious.
Not often, unless they've seen another dentist, so they have an idea of what treatment costs would be. Most will say, well, I don't really know. What do you think this would cost? And so that's when I will give them a range, you know, depending on what you're looking for. You know, if your goal is to keep your teeth for the rest of your life and you want to just make them functional and you're not focused on the aesthetics, then, you know, I relate it to something like a car, you know, like a Honda. You know, all the way up to, if you want this option, it can be up to a Mercedes, a luxury car, you know, but the price range is about this, or I'll give them a price range per unit. And depending on how many units they need will make the difference. So, you know, again, it's like a builder. They have a price per square foot, right? Well, that's the price per square feet. How many square feet do you want in your house? Yeah. So I'll give them a per unit number and say, depending on the number of units you need, that will be your fee, and they can do the math. It's simple.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But it's not a final number. They know that that's a range.
Right. Yeah. And I already know the answer to this, but some people may be confused by the message. When people give you a budget, you're not lessening the quality of your treatment or what you're going to do. Just maybe extending. So the variable might be when they do this, but the constant is always quality, right?
Right. There's people that come in who are coming in purely for cosmetic concerns. That's different. But if you have the patient that needs to be restored and you say it is a huge treatment plan and they can't do it all at one time, what they're asking you is, how can I phase this really to make it affordable for me? And it's finding out what they can afford, because if it's a couple hundred dollars, a couple thousand dollars, well, how can we get this person so things don't get out of control for them, so that we take care of the worst things first? And so they appreciate that, because I think, you know, so oftentimes the patients that you see that come in that do no dentistry at all is because they were overwhelmed by the huge number that was given by their last dentist. Right. And they think, there's no way I can afford to do that. And so they don't do it.
Right.
But there's somewhere in between, you know, there has to be somewhere where we can still treat our patients and give them a service, but help them work towards their goal, even if they can't afford it all at this time.
Yeah.
And so I try and lay that out for them and show them that I'm working side by side with them, and things can change sometimes. You know, we start off small, and sometimes the next year the patient says, hey, you know what? I can do a lot more this year. And so you just never know.
Absolutely. Now, I do get a lot of questions from younger dentists who are like, okay, well, Amanda, like, tell me, what questions do you use? And what, like, I get it, but what do you do? And there's a certain point, Amanda, where you probably just kind of trust yourself in this space, where I think, and I want you to speak to this, but when you truly trust yourself as a professional, you walk in an opportunity and go, hey, look, it's just two people talking. No matter what they give me, we're going to be okay. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think some of it just comes with time too, and feeling comfortable, but it's actually a lot less stressful just having a conversation with a person now than the amount of stress I put into trying to plan for these cosmetic consults the way I used to do them, with all the clinical components and, you know, telling them how to build this full mouth rehabilitation. So now it's just two people having a conversation. And I do take notes. I mean, it's conversation, but I try and acknowledge things that they tell me so that they know I'm paying attention and I'm listening. So I do take notes while we're talking, and sometimes I'll re-ask the question over something that we discussed and say, you know, elaborate a little bit more on that. Tell me why this has been bothering you for so long. So it's not difficult, though, and it's not anything that I think everyone can do. It's just doing it differently, I think, than what our brains want to do right out of dental school, which is, let's talk about dentistry.
Yeah. Now, I am crazy curious about a few details. You know, on this journey in dentistry, you probably, you know, you realize there's things you become self-aware of. You're like, I'm just better at this time of day. Or how much time do you allot for these? What time of day do you do them? Do you charge for them? Or do you say, hey, look, I like doing these in the morning when I'm fresh? Like, give us some perspective on
that. Yeah. I don't think there's any right or wrong way to do it. I can just tell you what's worked in my practice. Yes, I charge for them. I used to not charge for them. Okay. And I know a lot of my colleagues don't charge for them and it works great for them. I do charge because when I didn't, I had a huge influx of non-quality patients coming in, taking up time on my schedule. And, you know, the return on investment was spotty. You know, I couldn't really make way of, you know, was it worth it or not? So when I started charging, and it's a nominal fee, right? But if they accept the treatment, then that would be reimbursed to them towards their treatment. But it's not much, but it's just enough to say, hey, Dr. C's time is worth something, mm-hmm. you know? And so I get more serious lookers coming in, so to speak. I prefer to have these at the end of the day, just because I like to do my restorative appointments early in the morning. I'm fresh, I'm better. And at the end of the day, it's no dentistry. It's mm-hmm. kind of, let's just talk kind of thing. And I like that. You know, I've had lunch, everybody's refreshed. I maybe have an afternoon coffee and I can get in there and just have conversations with the patient. So I do my consults at the end of the day when I'm not double booked, and I make sure that I am not double booked with other appointments or anything, because there's nothing worse than, you know, saying hello to a patient and then having to step away.
Right.
So when I'm there the entire time. And I keep these appointments about 20 minutes, no more than 20 minutes.
Really? Okay. 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So when you have the conversation, let's say they really like you, like you're like, I don't like you. Take us through, you know, the trust theme is consistent throughout your entire process, but how do you describe what we're going to do next as a patient?
Like what I would tell a patient if they say, I like you.
Yeah, absolutely. So because you are, you know, I know you well enough to know that like you're going to spend the time to gather the data and do all the things that you used to do or still do. Right. So give us some perspective on that. How do you describe that next step in the process?
So usually the way it goes is we usually end and say our pleasantries or whatever. And the patient will usually say, I think I want to get started on this. You know, how does this work? What do I need to do next? I'm like, that's wonderful, Mrs. Jones. I'm like, so the way it works in my practice is let's start off and do a comprehensive exam. We'll get you scheduled for that, you know, and we'll cover the logistics if you have any current radiographs, or we'll take new ones. And I just walk them through the process. And so they know we're going to do an exam. We're going to do a full set of photos. And at that time, I'll tell them, you know, once I get an exam, I get to take a look clinically. I know what's going on. I'll be able to give you a finalized treatment plan, including any specialists, any referrals, and things we need. But you know the range, you know what to expect. And if I know, you know, that you're open to getting orthodontics or getting this, then that helps me formulate my treatment plan too. So, you know, we leave and usually the treatment coordinator will schedule their new patient appointment. But I already have an idea that, yes, this patient wants comprehensive treatment, or no, they're limited by this. And so I can kind of prepare for that appointment in a way, but it's still just a standard exam appointment, you know? So at this point, I'm still not investing a whole lot into it, but they're coming through my practice instead of just a cosmetic consult. Now they're going to come through my door as a new patient. So the hygienist will typically see them, gather all that information. They will leave with a formalized treatment plan, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. And then typically, how long do you tell them that appointment is? Maybe hour and a half, 2 hours, or?
About an hour and a half, 2 hours. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And the other thing too, I've seen this with a lot of dentists, you know, even the second appointment is consistent with your philosophy, which is so many times people are quick to put a Facebook or all these things in there.
Oh,
you know, they're so quick. And really it's about connection, even in that second appointment, as you're gathering data. Can you 100%. Tell us your philosophy on that?
You nailed it on the head. I mean, when I first got out of school, and I laugh, like if I could be a fly on the wall to go back to see my younger self and the way I did dentistry, I mean, it'd be funny. So I went to all this crazy CE, right? Comprehensive dentistry. I'm learning all this occlusion stuff. And I go back and I was taking models on every single new patient. I'm doing a face bow on everybody. I'm taking full arch impressions. I'm marking every excursive movement, every palpating, every muscle. I'm doing all these things. And, you know, some patients are like, wow, I've never had that kind of exam. Or some are just like, how much longer is this going to take? And can I get my teeth clean? You know?
And you're trying to justify yourself in the moment. Go,
And meanwhile, I'm not really that productive. I'm not meeting my business goals, you know? And my treatment acceptance wasn't great either. So I think when you start to realize the person, What do they want? Because some people, let's be honest, they just want to get their teeth cleaned and be out of there. Right. You know, but the people that really want that kind of comprehensive care, you know, it's again, if you want to do this business, then we'll talk the details. But I'm not going to gather all this stuff if that's not what you want. So I have a real standardized new patient exam that I can keep under an hour, hour and a half. But if it is more complex and I know that that's what the patient wants, they want to figure this out and they're going to invest the money to do the co-diagnosis with me, then okay, we'll spend that time and we'll bring you back. So it's not that we're neglecting patients and saying only you deserve it or you deserve it, but it's figuring out who wants it. And I tell those patients, you know, you look like you have some wear in your teeth, you know, is this something that you've noticed over the years or you ever paid attention to? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And, you know, there's some patients, as you have that conversation, say, Mrs. Jones, you know, I do believe this is something to do with your bite. And there's a couple ways we can address this. And you can read them. And they'll say, you know what? I don't want to. What needs to be fixed? If I have to do braces, forget it. I'm not going to do it. Or I don't have the money. So I'm not going to do a face bow on this person. I'm not going to take models because they said no. So it's just reading these people and understanding, formulating your treatment plan according to those person's needs.
Yeah.
And I think we push so much what we want all the time on these people. And, you know, and I think probably one of the biggest things is, maybe Chris Ramsey said something. Mm-hmm. He said to me that no is an option, right? So right, when they say, right. When they say, well, what are my options? Well, you can do nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true.
Right.
But what's going to happen if you do nothing? Well, let me tell you, as your healthcare professional, this is what's going to happen. These are the risks that you run into. This is what can happen in 5-10 years. But if you choose not to do it, that's fine. You know, nobody needs to do anything if they don't want to. You know, I think so often we tell them, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. I mean, you don't need teeth. People live long, healthy lives without teeth. But if you want teeth, if you want your teeth to outlive you, then here's what I recommend.
Yeah. And have you had to train yourself not to take this personally when people are like, oh.
Yeah, for sure. I would take it very personally and think, oh, my gosh, you know, they think I'm too young. They don't think I'm smart enough or that I have the skills. And now as your confidence comes up, your treatment acceptance comes up and you just realize that it's okay. Not everybody's going to like you. Some people say, no, it's not the right fit, but I'm okay with it. And I think patients can read that too, when you're not so eager and you know that if you don't want to work with me, that's okay. But yeah, it was so nice to meet you.
Yeah. And as you're building trust and you go through the dogma sometimes of learning such great restorative dentistry, you can get stuck in a box where you're like, okay, well, they come to the appointment and then we have the next appointment. And then there are times people don't say yes, and it takes them a while to come back around, right? And you've got to have that flexibility and leeway to know, hey, look, it might not be right now. It might be six months from now or 6 years from now. And does that happen more often than you would like to see in your practice or sometimes?
Yeah, you know, and I think you can't assume anything about anyone because you're so, people will surprise you. You know, sometimes I meet people and I think, oh, this person's totally not going to do this, but they do. And some people say yes, but like you said, maybe they say yes, but not right now. It may be circumstances in their personal lives or financial circumstances, and they're just working their way through, you know? And I mean, I've been surprised by patients that I thought just fell off and said, you know, I'm not going to do this. And they come back like 2 years, 3 years later, and they said, I'm ready. You know, and so whatever the reason may be, I think that people are people. We all have our different reasons. And so you treat everybody the same. You have those conversations. And when they're ready and they trust you and they want to do business with you, they'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a valuable lesson that's hard to learn at times, but it's true. You know,
It's so true. Well, as humans, that's how we connect, right? We want to be accepted. Everybody does in some way, shape, or form. Right. So when you hear too many no's, it's not sometimes a great day, but
Now I want you to speak to this as a leader. You've got a team of people around you. How did you get them indoctrinated to this whole philosophy and maybe change gears as you were going down the learning path?
I think the biggest thing was learning from other practices that we're doing it so well. So I've just been really fortunate just being involved with different academies and things and going to CE that I have some really great dental friends who have really successful practices and just asking them, you know, tell me how you do this and tell me how you do that. And that our teams have actually met one another and they keep in touch and we share different things. But again, going along with the doctor, getting personal coaching and business coaching, I think team coaching is huge as well. So, you know, to invest the money into that so that everybody's on the same page. You know, I think as a leader, you have to have monthly check-ins with everybody as a team. Just, hey, what's working? What's not working? What can we do better? Yeah. And sometimes the doctor is so well educated, but they don't go back and share what they learned with the team. Mm-hmm. So it's not congruent. Your practice philosophy is not reflected everywhere because you have the doctor on their own, but the team doesn't even know what the doctor knows sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think being always coming back and sharing with your team what you're learning, what you're doing, what your vision is for the practice, you know, and it's a real thing because sometimes, you know, your team doesn't even know what your vision is. So if you're not, as a young doctor, if you're going out and you have this vision to have this posh, high-end practice, but you never sat down with your team to say, hey, this is my vision, then that's a problem.
Yeah, because there is a danger in going out to see John Quayle do what he does because you're like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you come back and you see your own practice. You're like, oh, like, yeah. And your team is like, okay, she'll just be normal. Just let her go. She'll be fine by Tuesday. Like, let her calm down. And that's why you've got to land the airplane, you know, and work on it while it's on the ground. And do you do that on a regular basis with your team?
I'd like to say yes on a regular basis, but to be real, probably once a month, like I said, we'll spend a few hours to touch in and do those things. But what I did learn is, have you ever read that book, The One Thing?
Yes, I love it. Yeah, love it.
So I love that book. I think
Tell us about the book, though, because some people haven't read it. I love the book. I love it. So it's by Keller, from Keller Williams. Yes. So what's the essence of the book?
So the essence of the book is that we can have all these checklists, to-do lists, all these things. But what good is it, a to-do list, if we can never get through it? And there's things move to the bottom. So the one thing is, let's pick that one thing that we're going to focus on and get done. What's the priority? What's important? And when I read that book and I started going through and just saying, okay, what's the one thing that I want my team to get done this month? Like, what do we as a team, as a practice, get done? And, you know, whether it be, okay, let's make sure there's no no-shows this month. That's the one thing. So let's all put our minds together and say, how are we going to make that happen? How can we hold each other accountable? So whatever your one thing is, and it same filters into my, you know, personal life, because I'm juggling motherhood and writing this article and that, you know, what's the one thing? What do I have to get done today? What do I have to get done for this month? So there's that one thing that you make sure that you get done every day that you have that's important to you, or that week or that month. And I think it makes such a difference, you know, because we're oversensitized now with computers and iPhones and all this stuff. And we think we have all these apps to organize us, but there's too much stuff. There's just too much. So when you have that one thing, it just makes it a little easier. So my one thing today was, I got to do this interview.
Thank you. Thank you. We're crazy grateful for that.
There you go. Made it happen. I got my internet, I got my buds, and I'm good to go.
You're good. And I love that book. It's better to do one thing really well than nine poorly.
Yeah.
You know, so that is just awesome. So any other thoughts that you have that have been game changers when you look at treatment acceptance, or just things that have changed your perspective on the way you practice, that you go, this is just better. It's better than the way I used to do it.
Yeah. I do believe for any dentist going out there is, and I said it before, I mean, get coaching, get help, ask questions, learn from people that are already doing it well. You know, I mean, you talk about John Quayle and going out there to learn the clinical dentistry. Everybody thinks of John and his great clinical mind. But, you know, what some people don't know, who don't know John, is his business mind is fantastic. You know, I mean, and so.
And he's a really good dude.
Ask him, like, how do you do this? You know, learn from other people, because they've figured some things out and you can learn from that. So, and I think so often we're in our own island and We think we have all the answers and we got to figure it out. But I mean, I ask everybody I know. Like if I have friends that are doing it well, I call them up. I send them an email. I have no problem doing it because I learn the most that way.
Yeah. What would you say to a young dentist? Because I get a chance to speak to all these kids at the dental school.
Yeah.
Let's say if you were to give young dentists like one or two pieces of advice, what would you say?
Invest in CE right from the start. You know,
Even if you think you can't afford it.
Even if you think you, because that's the number one question that I get from young dentists asking me when they're like, oh, it's so expensive. But I mean, how can you put a price on it? You know, if a course is $10,000, but you're able to sell, I hate using the word sell, but you're able to complete three cases that year that you wouldn't know how to do if you didn't take that course. How does that not pay off? You know, so thinking that they're going to wait to take CE when they can afford to do it is a mistake. Do it now. Do it right and save yourself from making those mistakes right from the get-go.
Yeah. No different than saying, I got to make some money to have children. No, you have children now and then you just figure it out, right? If I would have waited, I would have never had kids. You know, like you just do it.
Right? I have four. Oh, yeah. No.
Me too.
Oh, you have four too. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I have three teenage daughters and that's a whole nother ball game. So that's fun. Cool. Well, I am so crazy grateful to have you on today. I know now you do a lot of teaching, instructing and speaking. Now, I know people are going to want to reach out to you and say, hey, look, and I'm just telling you, if you get a chance, you got to see this amazing woman. You're just doing an incredible job and you're real. You're very much a real person, which is just awesome. So how can people find you?
SEAY Amanda@gmail.com. My website's amandac.net, and so you can message me through there as well. So look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And just stick around for us.
Thank you, Kirk.
Yeah, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching today. I hope you enjoyed this. I know you enjoyed this. And do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see and things that you'd like to see from Dr. C. We'd love to have her back on and just take some of these other components apart. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practice Show. You guys have a great rest of your day.